The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. On today's show, we'll update you on the response to the television program here in the UK over the last couple of weekends. And speaking of emails as well, we've got some listener emails to get through coming up in the second segment. And then later on in the show, hopefully, if we have enough time, we'll be able to flip through some of the verses that I didn't get around to last week on the role of the wife and mother, the role of the woman, why God created her. And these verses, as I say, there's quite a lot of them. God really does give us a lot of specific instruction when it comes to organizing our families God's way. Well, first I want to begin with just something I touched on yesterday about the strong leaders that we see emerging on the world scene today. Whether you look at Russia or Iran, or you go east of Russia to China, and yet the one area where there hasn't yet appeared a strong leader is the heart of Europe, Germany. Germany, as I mentioned yesterday, I mean, here it is, one of the strongest nations in the world, a top exporter of military armaments. It's obviously got the dominant economy in the European Union, but it just doesn't yet have the strong leader, and yet we're seeing so many headlines today. The latest news, of course, from those German elections over the weekend. Lots of headlines, lots of trends that are pointing to what Herbert Armstrong has said or said before he died in 1986. He said this for a period of decades, talking about that strong leader to emerge out of the heart of Europe. As I say, this is something that we've talked about for many, many, many years. And if you just look at those German elections over the weekend, right there in Angela Merkel's home territory, her home district, we're about to see some pretty alarming developments. Carnegie Europe had a piece, Judy Dempsey, about the changing face of German conservatism. She, in this article, points out how that Merkel's refugee policy is... It's not just the refugee policy that's driving a wedge between her and the conservatives in Germany. It's her increasingly more socialist vision or views for Germany, for Germany's future. And Dempsey opens her piece by talking about the elections from Sunday and how that it wasn't a happy day for the CDU party, coming in third place behind the far-right Alternative for Deutschland. Alternative for Germany party, the AfD, which pulled in about 20% of the vote. And it came in just ahead of the CDU, Merkel's party. Dempsey writes here, the AfD managed to capture one-fifth of the votes because it ran a campaign opposed to German Chancellor Angela Merkel's refugee policy. A year ago, Merkel welcomed hundreds of thousands of people fleeing the wars in Syria and Iraq. Since then, she's faced relentless criticism from Horst Seehofer, the leader of the CDU's Bavarian sister party, the Christian Social Union, as well as from the AfD. And so she's getting this relentless criticism from these more conservative parties. Seehofer, of course, would like to see some kind of a cap put on the number of refugees coming into the country. And there's, of course, been the recent deal between the EU and Turkey that's helped to reduce the flow of these migrants. But still, the crisis is not over. It's ongoing. And it's one that we've written about quite a lot this past year. I think back in, March 2016, there's an article in The Trumpet, Germany, Migrants, and the Big Lie. And as that article brings out, it's not like the Germans today that are upset about the direction of the country are all hardcore Nazis. It's not like the AfD party is a Nazi party. I mean, these are just regular Germans that are very concerned about the direction of the country and that feel like the government is lying to them about the dangers that the refugee crisis poses. That article from March, we wrote this. These people are simply, speaking of the Germans who are upset, they're concerned about the impact millions of migrants will have on their nation, its institutions, its infrastructure, its economy, its culture, and on the German people. They're concerned about Germany's future. But Angela Merkel's government refuses to give serious attention to these concerns and refuses to tell the truth about the impact the migrants are having and will have on the nation. And then notice this statement. This is from our Trumpet a few months ago. If she continues to do this, Germany's chancellor risks helping transform the German people and Germany itself into something very different and much more frightening than the democratic, peaceful, friendly nation we see today. And of course, the Bible speaks of this mind change. That's really a pretty amazing statement, a powerful one, that helps us to make sense of what's happening right now. Well, more than that, it helps us to see where this is leading, where this is headed. If you look at some prophecies, Isaiah 10 talks about howbeit he means not so, neither does his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy and to cut off nations, not a few. That's following the passage there in Isaiah 10 about God using the Assyrian rod as a corrective instrument. He's bringing that rod of punishment against an hypocritical nation, it says in the scriptures, against the people of God's wrath. And it speaks about a mind change. Habakkuk 1 and verse 11 also discusses this, about that leader to come out of the heart of Germany, out of the heart of Europe, this Daniel 8 man. And we wrote in The Trumpet, if this continues, Merkel's policy of, well, we can do this, we can let them all in, as we wrote in March, it risks helping transform the German people and Germany itself, that's prophesied, into something very different and much more frightening than the democratic, peaceful, friendly nation we see today. Going back to this Judy Dempsey piece, she says here, the CDU was and continues to be highly uncomfortable with Merkel's refugee policy. The party knows it's losing support, but so far there's no one to challenge Merkel. So far, I mean, it knows it's losing support. It knows it's declining in popularity. But so far, there's no one to challenge Merkel. But it's not only the refugee issue that bothers the CDU and explains how the AfD is chiseling away at the party's support. Merkel, since becoming chancellor in 2005, has also fundamentally changed the party in several ways. And then Dempsey goes on to note just how the party, the CDU, has been changing. Merkel has embraced more of the green policies or the environmental policies. She's also liberalized some of her views regarding the family. There more recently was the introduction of the minimum wage, which so many people in her party resisted against, and even Merkel did early on. And so she's moved a little more to the left. And so there's quite a few conservatives that are upset, not just because of the refugee crisis, but for other reasons too. It says, finally, with Merkel at the helm, Germany's once conservative Christian Democratic Union party has undergone major changes, many of which are irreversible. The big question is whether the AfD or the Christian Social Union will compete to capture what is left of traditional German conservatism and in turn challenge Merkel's Christian Democrats. Really, that's all that's missing here, is for someone to rise up to challenge Miss Merkel. To challenge Miss Merkel, as we said in March. I mean, she doesn't realize it, but she's helping to transform the German people. She's opening the way for this strongman to emerge. And when he emerges, though he comes in with flatteries and lots of nice things to say, when he does, you'll have to keep in mind Isaiah 10 and verse 7, and of course Habakkuk 1 and verse 6, verse 11 in that passage, the first chapter of Habakkuk. God prophesies that there's going to be a specific individual, one man, to emerge out of the Holy Roman Empire. This Daniel 8 man, as we talk about so often. Well, as I said yesterday, I mentioned it here again at the top, leaving aside the strong leader that we're waiting for, I mean, just look at Germany and look at Europe today. I mean, we've seen some of the aftershocks of Brexit as Europe was shocked to see that vote back in June. But now that the dust is settling, the European project moves forward. There was a piece just today in the Times of London, and the title says, EU parks its tanks on NATO's lawn with European army plan. Now, we've been right on top of this development as well, and to this point, most of it has just been all talk. Germany, perhaps, is the strongest in the Union, or the one that's maybe taken the most concrete steps toward the development of a European army. But at the EU level, really, it's been little more than talk to this point. Not a lot of action. But this piece here, this is from the Times of London. Here again, EU parks its tanks on NATO's lawn with European army plan. This is just from the Times today, September 6th. It says here, a timetable setting out steps to create EU military structures billed by some countries as the foundation of a European army will be announced this week. This week. The timetable setting. Here's where we're going. Says here Federica Mogherini, the EU's head of foreign affairs, told ambassadors yesterday that she would table the roadmap to take advantage of political space opened by the Brexit vote. And so now we're a couple of months on from Brexit, and the door is opening for this plan to go forward, because while Britain was in, well, Britain's going to be in for a little while longer. There was another story just the other day, I think in the New York Times, that talked about just how difficult it's going to be for Britain to extract itself from the European Union because it's been so deeply embedded into it. In any event, it's on the way out. And that too was prophesied, as you know. If you've listened to this program or followed the trumpet, you know that Mr. Armstrong talked about that 50, 60 years ago. How could he have known? How could he have known Britain would leave? Well, Britain's gone. Britain is on the way out. And when Britain was on the way in, you can be sure that Britain's voice would loudly protest all talk of a European army. But now that they're on the way out, it's opening the way for this roadmap to be implemented. Take advantage of the opening brought on by the Brexit vote. The Times says her plans for military structures, speaking of the Mogherini, her plans for military structures able to act autonomously from NATO have led to fears that the EU is seeking to rival the alliance that has been the primary European defense structure since 1949. And, of course, just looking at it on the surface, how can you blame Europe? You've got all this talk, particularly from Donald Trump, about how that Europe's got to step up and defend itself. President Obama's made similar statements. You can't expect the U.S.-led NATO effort to solve all the problems. And so here comes Europe with this plan, putting structures in place, laying the groundwork now for a military structure that would act autonomously from NATO. We're seeing the demise of NATO in Europe and the rise of the European defense structure. Ms. Mogherini told diplomats working for the European External Action Service that the military plan was the EU's best chance to relaunch itself after the shocking result of the referendum on EU membership. Shocking result of Brexit. She didn't expect it. So many in Europe did not expect it to happen. A lot of people in Britain didn't expect it to happen. But it goes on to quote Mogherini, who says, hey, this is a turning point. Okay, the dust is settling on that shocking result, but now we've got a chance to relaunch ourselves. Says here, we could relaunch our European project and make it more functional. This is quoting Mogherini again. Make it more functional and powerful for our citizens and the rest of the world. Or we could diminish its intensity and power. Her planned global strategy, it says, was drawn up this spring in secret to avoid derailing the referendum because many of her proposals had previously been blocked by British governments. And so just to give you an idea of how fast it's all moving and what goes on behind the scenes, I mean, they had all these plans. They were drawing them up in the spring. They knew the referendum was set for June 23rd. They didn't want to release it publicly because they knew that the British were dead set against it. So they waited until after the referendum, thinking all the while that Britain would vote to stay in. And then Britain votes to leave. And now it's out in the open. And now they're saying, look, this is our opportunity. We're at a turning point. This is the time for something dramatic. Something that can act autonomously from NATO. It says here, after the Brexit vote, the European Commission, France, Germany, Italy, and countries in Central Europe see a new chance to press ahead with deeper EU military integration without British opposition. And that's exactly what we've been saying, is that once Britain is on the way out, look for deeper integration with that core of Europe. There's going to be others that are on the outside as well. But look at the core. And look at the EU military integration in that core. That's what we want to keep our eyes on. It quotes Mogherini again, saying, we have the political space today to do things that were not really doable in previous years. It's astounding to think about what's happening and how fast it's moving, as I said yesterday, with respect to Merkel and the decline in her popularity, a five-year low after she was just riding high a year or two ago. Well, now you have the European Union saying, look, we have the opportunity now to do some things that simply weren't doable a few years ago. The article says here, last week the Czech Republic and Hungary backed the plan as the foundation to setting up a joint European army, an aim shared by Jean-Claude Juncker, the Commission President. It says Ms. Mogherini said that her plan would be a beginning and not a blueprint for a fully fledged EU army. So again, it's in the early stages. And there may still be some. In fact, I read I think it was by that same author, Judy Dempsey, who said that these were basically insincere attempts to build up an army, that it's not going to happen. NATO's still in place. America still dominates, and so on and so forth. But look, it's going to happen. It's happening. And when you go back, I'll get to these in just a bit, but when you go back and look at what Herbert Armstrong was saying back in the 60s, back in the 70s and 80s about the formation of a European army, I mean, the fact that this article is front and center in the Times today, that in itself is astounding. How did Mr. Armstrong know? How could he have foreseen this? It says here, the European army is not something that's going to happen anytime soon, she said. Now's the time for real stuff, and this is only the beginning. And then it says this, the blueprint envisages countries such as France, Germany, Italy, Spain, and Poland creating permanent military structures to act on behalf of the EU under a clause in the Lisbon Treaty that has never been used. The proposals will include tackling the procedural, financial, and political obstacles to the deployment of the EU's battle groups, 18 national battalions available but never used for military missions. See, it's there. I mean, the wording's been there. It's in the Lisbon Treaty. It's just never been used. And for skeptics that say, well, but, you know, the nations would never give up. They would never give up their autonomy to build up their own defense structures. They'd never look to the Union for protection. But look, since 1949, NATO's been the power. NATO's been the army. It had been a collective effort, U.S.-led, U.S.-dominant. This is nothing for the EU to do. I mean, they can get through the financials of this somehow or another. They will. It's a mixture of iron and clay. We know this. We know there's going to be some squabbling. We know there's going to be some differences. But in the end, there's going to be 10 nations. Iron and clay. 10 nations. 10 kings. One Daniel 8 man. One common currency. One military. One united military. That's what your Bible prophesies. That's what we've been saying. That's what we've been warning. This article later on says a timetable for the plan will be discussed at a meeting of 27 EU leaders, excluding Theresa May. She's not going to be a part of it. They're on the way out. And so the strongest voice of opposition won't be there present when this is all discussed. It says here, NATO officials have expressed concerns that the proposals will create rivalry and challenge the alliance's primacy as the main defense structure. Well, that's what's happening. They have good reason to be concerned. This is a dramatic shift in Europe's thinking. And Britain would have been a strong opponent to this. And there was a time when the United States would have voiced even stronger opposition. But the United States is now weakening, and dramatically so. And the United States is probably going to, in the end, it'll probably welcome this. Already, Germany and others have been encouraged to take the lead, to do more themselves. It says here, a Franco-German paper published shortly after the Brexit vote urged a permanent civil military chain of command for the EU, without mentioning NATO, reviving fears that European plans to displace the American-dominated alliance could resurface. This is quite a stunning article. EU parks its tanks on NATO's lawn with the European army plan. It says here, once the UK leaves the EU, it will change the dynamic and debate inside the EU, a diplomatic source said. You can imagine fresh focus on institutional construction and then looking around for a problem to solve with these new tools. There is some risk of returning to the institutional competition of a decade ago between NATO and EU. So the dynamic the debate, all of that's changing in the EU, and we're just what, a couple months on, 2.5 months on from Brexit. Now put this together, and this was at the Trumpet just last week, this article about that Spiegel story from August 12th, how that the United States has approved to modernize the nuclear weapons arsenal in Germany. The nuclear bombs stored in Germany, and how that production on this project begins in just a few years. These bombs at the Buchel Air Base. And as we wrote at the Trumpet last week, tentative plans are in place to consider modifying the German Tornado jets so that they'd be able to carry these weapons. It's amazing, isn't it? You have a dove, a so-called dove, in office there in the United States. One who's talked often the past 7.5 years about world peace and being strong through diplomacy and dismantling nuclear weapons, creating a world without nuclear weapons. And yet when you look at the cold, hard facts on the ground, you see a world that's in the midst of a global arms race. Look at all of the nations. This was in the December Trumpet last year. Not even a year ago. Richard Palmer writing there about how in 2011 we caught up with the military spending. Even when you adjust it for inflation, we caught up with the military spending. The world did. We caught up with what it was at the height of World War II. And we've been there ever since 2011. So every year now, this is like the peak spending of World War II. That's what the world is putting toward arms, bombs, ballistic missiles, tanks. And Richard went through region by region in that article. We're in the midst of a global arms race. All this talk about peace. Think of the prophecies about the ambassadors of peace weeping bitterly. The diplomats saying peace, peace, when there is no peace. Think about all those weapons we've talked about just sitting there in Europe, in Germany, in Turkey. That in itself is alarming enough. But then you have Europe working to build an army. Germany, one of the leading exporters of arms. My father in that, what was it, Europe's Dirty Secret. I forget when the article appeared, but I know he gave a program back in 2013 where he talked about just the grave danger that's there. All these nuclear weapons sitting on the continent. And now President Obama's work to modernize them. President Obama, of all people, modernizing nuclear weapons. That's what's happening. Is this a grave danger? It should be. That's the way people should see it. Notice what my father had to say in that 2013 program.
But if you think about the potential debacle that is here, it's just mind staggering that those weapons could be turned on us. There's not a thing in the world to stand in the way of those nations just taking over those bombs and using them in whichever area they want to use them in. Now, this is something that is downright frightening if you think about it for very long. And I'll tell you what the U.S. is doing is absolutely condemned by the Bible, because it's a matter of trusting in others rather than trusting in God. And America has designed those bombs to be used in planes of the host country. They designed them that way.
Now they're trying to modernize those arsenals, including the one sitting in Germany. Now look, you can listen to that clip and say, oh, well, that's so far-fetched. That's off the wall. Just like you could have scoffed at Herbert Armstrong years ago, decades ago, talking about Europe coming together for the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, forming a strong union, a common currency, yes, even a military union. It's all prophesied. It may seem far-fetched. But look, look at how much trust the United States is putting in its lovers, its enemies even. I just got the book yesterday, Jay Solomon's book on the Iran wars, mostly about the nuke deal that was finalized in January of this year. And just the faith that we put in our enemies, that, well, if we just get them to delay things by 8 or 10 years, then, well, by that point, Khomeini will be weak or he'll be dead, and of course they'll have a revolution, they'll embrace democracy, and the whole world will be a safer place. In that book, you have Secretary of State John Kerry talking about how he's certain that we avoided war by signing that deal, by implementing that deal on January 16th, 2016. He's certain. In fact, what's certain is that paves the way for more war, for another global arms race, certainly a regional arms race in the case of the Middle East. That's what other nations, the Gulf states, Saudi Arabia, Israel, they're all sitting there going, well, if this is what Iran's going to be doing, we've got to arm ourselves and get ready for the conflict, get ready for the clashes. The whole world is doing this. And the trust that we put in nations that were our enemies just a few decades ago. It's amazing. One more clip from my father's program. This is from October 2013.
Now, it should have been, you'd think it should have been stopped, that program of giving those bombs to those nations when the Cold War ended, but that didn't happen. And those countries could certainly take control of them any time that they wanted to.
That could certainly happen. I mean, how could that not happen? I mean, how could you scoff and say it could never happen when there's bombs sitting on their property? And to say, oh, well, they'll never be used against us. Herbert Armstrong warned exactly of that happening. He said so back in April of 1980 in the Plain Truth magazine. Firstly, he said this about Europe and the army that it would soon build. You may be sure that European leaders are conferring hurriedly and secretly about how soon they may unite and provide a united European military force so they can defend themselves. That's before the wall came down. That's when the Soviet Union still had control over Eastern Europe. And Herbert Armstrong was talking about European nations coming together in a union, talking about how to build a European army, a united European military force. Now that's happening. And he went on in that same article and talked about how once that union was in place, once it had its united military force, then they're going to return a lot of those bombs that the U.S. has stored right now in Europe. They're going to use them on us. Don't scoff about it. All these other things have come to pass. They're happening. There's some few remaining details to get sorted out. There's a few other major prophecies that we await. But look at the prophecies that are already being fulfilled, and look at the pace, as I said earlier, the pace of these prophecies. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll roll through a few emails that have come in and also update you on the last two programs that have been broadcast here in the UK. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States. One in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror. Their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening. And what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe. And it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
This week we're working on a video for the weeks ahead, a video in which we offer the autobiography of Herbert W. Armstrong, and some of you may know that we recently printed his old autobiography that came out in two volumes. The second one, a mixture. It had his writing up to a certain point, and then he didn't get to finish the entire story, sadly. And so there is a lot of his coworker letters in the last half of that second volume. The one that we've produced and printed brings all of his material, Mr. Armstrong's written material, together in one volume. And then there's a final chapter in there where we've summarized the last years of his life. It really makes for a complete story all in one volume. And we're hoping to advertise that here in the next couple of weeks on television here in the UK. The last couple weeks, this past weekend, we played a program titled The Seventh and Final Era of God's Church, happening now. And speaking of big books, that one advertised Raising the Ruins, and it brought in 153 requests for the book, which was a pretty good response overall. I think, if my memory serves me right, I think all totaled this year, the weekly average that we've been maintaining is about 165, 170-ish every weekend. And so some weekends we have a little bit more than that. Some we have a little bit less than that. In any event, 153, you add in the trickle-in numbers from the week here, and I'm sure next week it'll be somewhere around 160, 165 in total. Last week, the Wonderful World Tomorrow, here today, we had some beautiful shots in that program from our recent youth camp that we hosted here at Edstone in the first couple of weeks of August. That program advertised the God Family Vision and also the World, the Wonderful World Tomorrow booklet, and it generated 140 requests for both of those books. So that updates you then on the last couple of programs. And this coming weekend, we have a program on the indispensable role of the father. And in that program, we offer the conspiracy against fatherhood. First time, I think, that we've offered that on TV over here. And then together with that, we also offered Redefining Family, the booklet by Joel Hilliker. And we've advertised that once, I believe, about a year ago here in the UK. So hopefully that'll bring in a strong response. We'll let you know how it does on Monday or Tuesday of next week. This first email from one of our female listeners, it says, "Thank you, sir, for another stirring program. Mankind is so cleverly deceived by the God of this world. Truly, God has given the U.S. the king it deserves, as in 1 Samuel 8, verse 11. That's in response to one of the shows, I believe, from at the end of last week. This one here says, "Thanks to you and the team, the clips are moving. Yes, should be positively shocking. Please continue blasting the message, as some of us truly are profoundly blind and deaf. Please, please keep doing what you're doing, in spite of how it might hurt sometimes." Well, I don't think it necessarily hurts. It's a lot to keep up with, I suppose, those that are producing programs for KPCG on a regular basis. But then there's a lot going on, and in so many ways, with our news bureau back in Edmond and here at Edstone, just combing through a lot of the headlines and pulling together the most important stories from a prophetic standpoint. In a lot of ways, we wake up with a pretty good script already there developed for us. So in any event, we'll keep producing as much as we can. It says here, this one from Arizona, "Thank you for the very inspiring Reagan clips illustrating what a man of faith, character, wisdom, and love he was." That's in response to the program we ran last Friday, I believe, where we talked a little bit about his assassination, or the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan back in 1981. Another one from Arizona says, "You always encourage us to email you at the end of the program. So here goes, my first email to TD. I love the program. I know it's a wonderful way to learn how world news corresponds to Bible prophecy. I learn so much," it says. "I don't always get a chance to listen to the program during the week, but on Thursday, it's one of my days off from work. I do most of my housework on Thursdays, and while I'm cleaning bathrooms and washing dogs, I'm listening to the TD programs from the whole week. And before I know it, I'm through with sweeping, wiping, scrubbing bathrooms and washing dogs, all while my mind is enriched from this program. It helps me to see world events in view of Bible prophecy. Thank you and your staff, and those that fill in for you, for this God-inspired show." One final one here from Arkansas. It says here, "Thank you for admonishing us to email you at the conclusion of the show about President Reagan's attempted assassination." This would have been Friday's show once again. "It felt like your statement was aimed right at me when you said, 'I'm talking to you.' I've been meaning to email the show and tell you all what a great benefit it is to listen to the truth filled with and real hope, the truth filled with real hope from God." It says, the radio is so convenient and accessible. It's a real blessing." He writes, "I'm a policeman, and often I pray to God to help us as we do our job. When we're looking for lost children, I always pray to Him for help and that we always find them. When we're looking for dangerous people in dangerous places, I always ask Him to keep us safe and to help us be honorable and even be just in using force. He always takes care of us on those incidents. I ask for help in investigations, and within a few weeks or months, things begin to work out and we begin to solve these incidents." He says, "Many is the night I've been flying down the road with lights and sirens going on, the way to a shooting or homicide and hastily pray to God for help. And he answered every time. That comes an interesting response for sure, coming from one of our listeners, a policeman who resides in Arkansas. All right, well, when we come back, looking at the clock, we don't have a lot of time left. We'll have about 10 minutes or so left, and we'll take you through some of the important scriptures that God has canonized for us regarding the role of the woman. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of the Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
During our youth camp in August, I made the point to our young people that there's, of course, lots of subjects in the Bible that are discussed in quite a lot of detail, and there's also quite a few subjects that are not discussed in the Bible and that you can learn about through other means. You can study a lot about chemistry, for example, with a good chemistry textbook. But with respect to the instruction that God makes available to us in this foundational book, the Word of God is the foundation of all knowledge. It doesn't contain all knowledge, but it is the foundation. And when you consider that foundational truth, as it's discussed from cover to cover in God's inspired word, well, there's a lot that God has to say about marriage and family, about the role of the husband and father, about the role of the wife and mother. There's so much in there on that, because the foundation of any stable civilization is the family. That's the foundational building block of a safe and prosperous and peaceful society. A couple of weeks ago, we went through the father's role or the husband's role using the end of a few programs. And then we touched on the subject of the woman's role at the start of last week. From the very beginning, God said in his inspired work that it's not good for a man to be alone, which is why, you can read this in Genesis 2, of course, this is why God created a helper, a complement, a supportive part in the woman. The two of them together as one flesh can fulfill God's will for them, can build a family. In the New Testament, this is from Paul's book to 1 Timothy 5:4. It says here, I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, it says there, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. Guide the house, manage the family affairs. That's New Testament theology. The Worldwide Church of God, this is the church Mr. Armstrong established back in the 1930s. It produced a booklet in 1970 called The New Feminism. And it says here, I'll give you this quote in just a second, but it's basically pointing out just how dramatic the transformation has been in the role of the woman. Going back decades before this was written, 1970, it says 100 years ago, Women had children to teach, food to prepare, garden to tend, clothing to make, husband to take care of. It says American pioneer women, for example, shared a vital purpose. Every member of the family was part of the team. Husband, wife, and children were all critically important to the very survival of the family. There was no question that mom was important. No question about it. Alexis de Tocqueville even wrote of this. It talks about 100 years ago. I forget when Tocqueville wrote his work. I think it was in the 1850s or so. It says here, the very conditions under which people lived, as concerns both life and economics, gave women purpose. Also, there was so much to be done of importance that one's personal problems were minimized, mental attitudes were different, and in some ways, healthier. Society 100 years ago did have its problems. It was far from ideal. But the point is this, society was home-centered. It was home-centered. And since mom was homemaker, she was fulfilling a very important social role. Most men and women were sexually ignorant, and many women, no doubt, often suffered from lack of sexual fulfillment. But women generally could at least look to their important role as wife, mother, and homemaker. It was a challenging and rewarding job. But increasingly, the center of society is moving away from the home. The wife left in the home today has been stripped of almost every important responsibility that a wife ought to have. See, I mean, that was right at the very center of society, the home. It was at the center of society in Paul's day. And so he said there in 1 Timothy 5, that the woman should guide the house, manage the family affairs. In Titus, you find similar instruction, Titus 2, verse 3, it says, the aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becomes holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children. Paul said to Titus, you tell the older women in the congregation that this is what they ought to be teaching the younger women, how to love and support their husbands. And it says in verse 5, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. Here again, this is a message that people pretty much reject today. They don't accept this. Men or women. They don't accept it. It's old-fashioned. And that quote I gave to you, the new feminism, I mean, it shows just how different the thinking is just in the last few decades compared to what it was a century ago, 2 centuries ago, 2,000 years ago. Teach them to be discreet. Teach them to be chaste, to be keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. You see, when this gets turned on its head, like Isaiah 3 said it would be, everything begins to break down. And so we're seeing our society around us unravel. We're seeing a global arms race. We're seeing a lot of division, fighting and terrorism, a lot of unhappiness, all kinds of social ills, problems with drugs and depression in our rich and prosperous nations. So much unhappiness, so much division, so much strife in the families. And there's so much information in the Bible about marriage and family. If people would just turn to it. I don't have time to go through Proverbs 31. What a beautiful passage that is. Most of it directed squarely at women. I mean, there's a pretty important section at the first part of that chapter aimed at men, too. One chapter, Proverbs 31. Read it sometime. Beginning in verse 10, you get into the virtuous woman and her role. What does she do? What are her responsibilities? What does she participate in? What's her role within the family? What's her role within the home? And how important, how significant is that role? And how is she treated? How do her children treat her? What does her husband think of her? And how does she work to support her husband, to love her family, to guide the home? It's all there, as I say, in that wonderful chapter. I don't have time to read through it here today. Maybe we can again save that for another time. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to send us your emails, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's program. We'll see you tomorrow.